Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. This is Pastor David Bowser. I am not alone, but my normal co-hosts are not with me this week because they're on various vacations and whatnot. So with me here in the studio making his Beyond Sunday debut is Lord of Life Director of Youth Faith Formation, Josiah Canto. Josiah, welcome to Beyond Sunday.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, we're glad to have you on. You have been a listener for at least a period of time.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what you tell me. Maybe you've just been buttering me up.
Short time listener, long time fan.
Whatever works, man. Yeah. I appreciate that. But no, we're glad to have Josiah on today. Josiah joined our staff here at Lord of Life back when was it May? Was that when you officially started?
March 23rd was
March. It was an M month. Right?
Yeah.
It is also in the midst of Easter, so that whole season kind of blends together for me personally.
But I don't remember the first month here.
See, there you go. So Josiah is here, and so he's going to have a chance to share a little bit about his life and experience and kind of what led him here. And then we're going to have some more conversation about meaningful impacts of our own faith stories and how that shakes out. So we'll get into that here in a little bit. But we're going to start with a little silly news story.
Perfect.
So Josiah, have you been following the World Cup at all?
Yeah.
You can say no. Yeah. It's fine if you.
No, I'm part Portuguese, so I follow them.
Okay.
And by follow, I would Google Portugal and South Africa occasionally.
Okay.
So
Portugal lost in the knockout rounds. How did South Africa make it to the knockout rounds? I don't know how they did this year.
They played in the World Cup.
They existed. Okay. Yeah, there you go. That's good. Well, are you familiar? When this releases, let's see, this will come out on Monday. So the champion will have been crowned.
Okay.
As of recording, we don't yet have a champion. We're down to, we have a semifinal that's being played in about 10 minutes, the second semifinal is being played. So right now we know that France has been knocked out. So we know that Spain is in.
Was that an upset?
France was definitely a favorite. I mean, France and Spain are both very competitive teams, so I don't know that it would be considered an upset, but it wasn't like a David and Goliath situation. It was more like a Goliath beat Goliath kind of thing.
Okay.
But, you know, one of the Goliaths have to lose, and France lost this time. So, and we've got England playing Argentina this afternoon, so we'll see who comes out on top. So three teams left. By the time this releases, someone will have won. Congratulations to the victor. But have you, in your, you know, being aware of the world and existing in the world, have you heard of this gentleman Erling Haaland?
That name does not sound familiar.
Okay, so Erling Haaland has been a player for Norway.
Okay.
Norway has kind of made a, I don't know, it was surprising to me. I don't know if people follow international football. Maybe they were more ready for this than I was, but I was not expecting Norway to make the run that they made.
Yeah.
And this one player, Erling Haaland, has a long flowing blonde hair, kind of Fabio-esque if you remember him.
I can't believe it's not butter, Fabio.
Did he do those commercials with him?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, the tiger, the lion, the...
Yeah, that definitely has the Fabio vibe. So anyway, you know, long flowing hair, tall, big Norwegian gentleman, right? So he's gained some fame. He's very good. Has had a couple of very impressive goals during the World Cup. I think he had 7 goals in the... scoring 7 goals. That's right here in my news story. So through the World Cup, which is a very high number. Like, very impressive to do that in a single World Cup. Well, I have some good news for Mr. Haaland, Erling, or maybe Erling. I don't know how to pronounce Norwegian names. Peru, their national identity registry. So this is like the list of people who have named their, who have named things, right?
Sure.
468 newborns have come in with the name Haaland, while another 91 were given the full name of Erling Haaland. So over 500 newborns have been named after Erling Haaland in the latest bout, reflecting the Norwegian footballer's influence. Now, this is fascinating, but this is actually not even the top name of like soccer players who have been given names in Peru.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know any soccer players?
Ronaldo, wasn't he a soccer player?
Ronaldo was. He was for Peru, so that was a good one to know.
Didn't Will Ferrell
Not Peru,
soccer?
Sorry. He was for Portugal. He's for Portugal.
Yeah, so and then Will Ferrell.
I don't know if Will Ferrell.
Well, the kicking and screaming movie. That's kind of my.
Yeah, that's not the same thing.
Okay.
All right. So a couple of other names here that I think are pretty fun. So Brazil's Neymar. Neymar was a famous soccer player.
Okay.
He's the undisputed leader with over almost 34,000 namesakes in Peru.
Neymar.
Neymar. Yeah, Neymar, over 34,000. Messi has 3,400 with another, or with 290 of those officially being Lionel Messi, but 3,400 just as Messi. Lamine Yamal, Spain's prodigy, has 1,185. And yeah, that's it. So Peru, very, very prominent in this. They're spokesperson Ivan Torres of the Peru's National Registry of Identification and Civil Status says that football stars tend to set the trend in Peru when it comes to choosing names.
Wow.
For newborns.
So it's like a football thing.
Football. Football. Yeah.
What about croquet or tennis?
I don't know any famous croqueters. Do you know a famous croqueter? I know two famous tennis players, and I don't think either one of them are playing tennis anymore. I think they're both retired. Oh, wait. No, I know four, but they're definitely all retired.
So the Williams.
Okay, I know six. So Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi. Those were the two big ones that were when I was growing up. Yeah. And then Nadal and Federer were the two that were like when I was in college and seminary. Nadal and Federer were going back and forth. And then the Venus sisters would be another good one.
Andre Agassi, he had the long hair too, right?
He did at one point have long hair, and then he shaved it, and he went I think he started to go bald, so he just went shaved.
Do you think all these soccer players, do they have long hair? Does Neymar have long hair?
I don't think it's exclusively exclusively long hair. I don't know Neymar's hairstyle, but I don't think they all have long hair. I think Haaland has a ponytail. It's famously long. I don't know about famous is maybe not the right description, but it's, yeah. It's Locks of Love long, right?
Would you name your child after one of those names?
So that's an interesting question. I don't know that I'd go after a footballer because I don't think I'm a big enough football fan.
Yeah.
Though I will say Erling or Haaland, those are nice names. That's lovely. Messi does not have a nice, I don't like that ring to it. No offense. He's a very talented soccer player. I just don't like the ring as far as the name. But I was going to ask you, actually, what sports star, or if there's a sports star or if there's a sport that would have a star, would you be most likely to name a child after? Would you go after, I know you're a big Spurs fan, so would you go after a Spurs player? Would you go after a basketball player in general, or would you would you look for the croquet star or the cricket star perhaps?
I love basketball, but I think baseball names.
Baseball has some good names.
I'd be Josiah, what's the Angels player name? Darren Grant.
I don't know the Angels at all. Okay.
So you know the Cincinnati Reds.
I do know the Cincinnati Reds. So you could have Pete Rose. You could have Ken Griffey or Ken Griffey Jr. You could have Barry Sanders. You could have who's the guy that's there right now? Starts with a D. I'm going to forget his name. Anyway,
It could be Josiah Otani.
De La Cruz. There it is. De La Cruz. Yeah.
What last name do you think would flow well with your name?
With Bowser?
Yeah.
Mm. You know, David Bowser has a nice ring to it, personal opinion, but not a famous baseball player. So, if I'm thinking of a famous baseball player, Barry.
Barry Bowser?
Barry Bowser's not bad.
So you like the initials BB?
Yeah, BB. Yeah, it's got something to it. Yeah. I do like my middle name is Robert. So right now my initials are Dr. Bowser, which I think is fun, even though I'm not at all a doctor in any shape or form.
Yeah.
But I think that's entertaining. Yeah.
There was someone I knew in college who had the name for someone from Harry Potter.
Was it Harry Potter?
No, it wasn't Harry Potter.
Ginny Weasley or Hermione Granger or Ron Weasley or...
One of the professors.
Snape, McGonagall.
No, keep going.
Dumbledore.
No, we're getting closer.
Who's the herbology professor? Flitwick does charms.
Yeah.
Herbology is Professor Sprout. Hagrid. Does care of magical creatures for a brief time.
As soon as I hear the name, I'm going to know it.
This is great because this is really testing my knowledge.
Yeah.
of Hogwarts professors.
I can
Rubus picture, Lupin.
No, I can picture the name. I just see an O.
I'm not a psychic man. I'm going to need more than that. Seeing an O is
not Artemis Fowl. That's not Harry Potter.
Artemis Filch.
No. Yugi. Not Yu-Gi-Oh!
I have no idea what you're going for here.
Well, anyways, this someone in college had the name, and then Harry Potter came out, and everyone thought he was named after Harry Potter, and he hated it because even all the professors were like, "Hey, you were named after this Harry Potter character that's not as popular as any of the other ones, but we still know who it is because the name was mentioned at just enough times." And he went through college for 4 years.
But he'd been around for long before Harry Potter. If you're already in college when this he was born well before Harry Potter came out. Yeah.
For some reason, people just didn't make that connection.
Well, I'm sorry for him, and I'm sorry that we don't know what name it was. I'm going to assume it was Sprout, that his name was Sprout.
Let's just say Sprout.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to pop up at a random time today.
Okay, well, when it pops up, don't call me.
Okay.
You can tell me another time.
I like to be Josiah Wembanyama.
Wembanyama. Okay. Yeah. Go straight for the Spurs reference there.
Yeah.
Would that make you married to Mr. Wembanyama, or are you just taking his name without any sort of legal contract or obligation?
Well, no, we just share it. I think Wembanyama is a very common French name. It's in like the 15th percentile. Smith. Yeah, it's the Smith of France.
Right.
I feel confident.
More Wembanyamas than a French phone book.
Yeah, exactly. There's Mr. Wembanyama. It's just a very common French name. I'm confident of that research that I've not done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if there's one thing that Beyond Sunday is known for, it is for being confident in research that we have not done. So
I assumed everything was very factual.
Everything is very factual. It just doesn't mean that we've actually done research on it. We don't have to have done facts to do research. No, I said that backwards. You don't have to have done research to have facts.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just know facts. Sometimes you don't have to research things. But I did some research for us today, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
What's one random fact that you know that nobody cares about?
I know all sorts of random facts about Ohio history. And my dad is one of the few people who cares about them. And he's who I learned most of them from.
I love Ohio. I have family from Ohio. Yeah. So what's one random Ohio fact?
Oh, man. So like the electric starter that you have in your car, like the fact that you can turn a key and your car starts, invented in Dayton, Ohio by Charles F. Kettering, who was the namesake of my hometown.
I thought I was going to care more about that fact.
See, that's a really important fact. You should care more about that. Because if he had not invented that, you would still be cranking your engine and it would snap back every once in a while and break your leg and we'd have a lot more broken legs.
But we have the push button now.
Well, I don't know who invented the push button, but we got to the push button because we had the electric starter first. Had to start with the electric starter.
That is pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. All sorts of other things. I could go on. Wright Brothers from Dayton, Ohio.
Could you do a whole podcast about Ohio history?
Oh, man. Yeah, I could definitely. It would be a question of, A, how well researched would it need to be? Because like if I did some research, I could do it with no problem. But I could do at least two or three episodes off the cuff.
Oh, wow.
And then it would be like, how long would I have to carry it on? That I'd want to like know more.
How long do you think your co-host would let you get away with sharing Ohio facts?
That's if my dad is the co-host, we'd be great. If it's Patrick, he wouldn't make it through the first 30 seconds of an episode. He would refuse to do it. He'd say, no, we're not doing that.
It's great.
All right. Well, hey, we're not here to talk about Ohio history, as hard as that might be for our listeners to
of
believe.
Of
That is not our purpose today. We're here to get to know you and hear a little bit about your story. And then we're going to talk a little bit about camping ministry as well as we get towards the end, because it's been a big part of both of our stories.
Yeah.
And I think it's got some things to say for us. So if you can, I'm just going to ask some questions. This is very casual, but you can answer in as formal of a way as you wish.
Thank you.
But I will keep it casual with my questions, and your answers can
good.
Keep it formal. Tell us a little bit about Josiah growing up. Where were you born? Where was your formative years as a kid? And what did maybe faith look like in that component of your life?
Yeah, so I was born in Flagstaff, Arizona. And then when I was 2.5, my parents moved to China through our church at the time, and they were missionaries, and so lived there for about 5.5 years, and it was fun to kind of grow up there, because my earliest memories are from China, so lived mostly in Beijing. And I just remember going to school, and I think there's a lot that happened that I didn't really appreciate at the time, because you know, this was late 80s, early 90s. So there's definitely times they had to go to underground churches and things like that. So it was a different world. And I remember showing my picture English Bible to friends from China. And to me, it just seemed like the norm. I'm like, oh, you know, we have to be quiet today. And then there was one time we were driving across a border, and my parents had Bibles in the back of their car. And we got pulled over, and thankfully they didn't check the trunk. Like, I just remember my parents being really anxious, and I just wanted to roll down the window and say, no, we just got Bibles in the back, you know, and my life could be very different right now if I did that.
If you had done that. Yeah. Sure,
So that was great. And then moved back to the States just for about a year and a half, 2 years. And it was really hard coming back. Like, because I think I'm so grateful for my upbringing, but one thing I don't know if my parents understood as much is coming back when you've grown up, you know, you're from America, moved to a different country. The majority of your experiences are there, and coming back. And I just remember being a kid and just walking around and saying and doing things that were kind of the norm in China. And kids just laughed and made fun of. And I became really self-conscious. I was actually a really shy kid.
Yeah. So you come back and everybody perceives you as American because
you
don't look like you were born in China. You look like you were born in the United States, right?
So
they perceive you as American, but you don't have any of the American culture knowledge.
Yeah,
that's really hard, I'm sure. So you came back, you said you came back for like a year and a half?
Yeah, then I moved to Indonesia. My parents really loved teaching over there. So moved over there, and I was like in middle school at the time, and that was fine. I think it was very different than China. Like, you know, here in the States, we got 50 states, and I've told people that moving from California, where I was before here, is like moving from one state that thinks its own country to another state that knows it's its own country.
Right. And was its own country at one point in its history. Yeah, Texas. I cannot do a podcast on Texas history. I would fail that. But I do know that at one point Texas was its own country. They're big on telling us that.
Yeah, I learned to change my license plate pretty quick when we moved over
sure.
here.
Yeah. So especially with a California plate. California plates are not appreciated in this area.
Yeah, that was a fun discovery pretty quickly. So I was in Indonesia, and then we moved back to the States, and we're in Arizona for a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. And so at the time, like, we just attended a lot of different churches. I never had like a stable, because we were always moving. So I never had childhood friends. I never had a church community. I mean, I had church communities, but it was always so quick, the change. So my first, you know, really feeling connected was going to a Lutheran church. Mm. And they had a confirmation program. My parents they knew what confirmation was, but we weren't super familiar. So we actually moved from Riverside to Lake Elsinore. So I was a part of like...
This is in California?
Yeah, California. Okay. So I was in California from Arizona for a couple of years as middle school kid. And so I technically have been confirmed three different times in three different Lutheran churches.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So I guess I'm technically about as Lutheran as you can get.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was fun. And really for me, it was just the community. I just loved the kids in there. And so all my confirmation classes were small. So I think there was like 3 to 5 kids. But I do have an embarrassing story when I was acolyte.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. So I'm glad this conversation is just between you and I so I can share
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. It's purely private. Nobody else is ever going to hear it. 100%. It's definitely not going to be preserved on the internet forever.
Yeah.
So.
Well, like you've always said you only have 1 or 2 listeners. So, right. And I know I'm one of those.
Our dozens of listeners. Yeah.
So I was going to Acolyte, and I remember going to light the candle, and I didn't have a belt on, and I had the robe on, so my pants fell down.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. Yeah. So it's not that you didn't have the robe belt. You didn't have a belt.
No, I didn't have a belt. And so I had to like just, my pants fell, and I realized if I kept walking, I was going to trip. So I just like kind of moved like a penguin.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's just staring at me, and my mom and dad are like, "What are you doing?" And so I just scoot up, and it was a good like 45 seconds it took me to get to the front to light the candle.
Sure.
So it was this awkward silence.
Yeah.
And then when I went to go sit down, because we would sit up front, I reached down to pull up my pants, and then like I fall over,
sure,
and like just smack my head.
Classic.
And yeah, you know, normal things happen to every confirmation kid and stuff. And
I mean, everybody's got some sort of trauma experience like this, right? I mean,
oh yeah. And then, you know, I don't remember the aftermath, because a lot of times I feel like I fell or done so many silly things, mm-hmm. whether unintentionally or intentionally, that I've just been able to block it out and just move forward. My shame ability ended years ago.
Yeah.
So
zero shame from Josiah.
Yeah. Yeah. So pantless Josiah acolyte, you know.
So I just want to ask a follow-up question, and then we're going to move on.
Yeah.
When you say pants fell down, are we talking like around the ankles, or are we talking like they shimmied and like, oh no, they're gonna be around my ankles if I'm not careful?
No, they're around my ankles.
And no one noticed? How long were your acolyte robes, man? I'm just
I'm sure people noticed, but I was also in this, like, I was terrified at the time. So I'm sure the pants were around, and I'm sure someone said anything, but I think it was one of those things where my mom and dad didn't want to stand up in the middle of service. You know, there was like, I think 80, 90 people in worship say your pants, because they would have to walk, because it was this really long, narrow church.
Oh, sure. Okay. I got you.
And so, yeah, it was just,
did you have to do like the whole aisle? Like, were you walking from the back forward?
Yeah. Or,
I love this for you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. So ever since then I've discovered belts.
Well, that's good. I'm glad we found belts for your sake. All right. So this gets us up to kind of middle school-y time. So you've been living internationally. Sounds like you had some incredible experiences there. Sounds like you've bounced around from churches a little bit, but you've kind of found a niche with your Lutheran confirmation groups here in California. So let's get to like high school, college. What was faith looking like for you as you got to that era?
Yeah, so I remember I went to, when I was in Lake Elsinore, they had a summer camp option, and it was at the beach in San Diego, and I...
Hey, if you got to go to summer camp, might as well go to the San Diego beach, right?
Yeah, and I was excited, and I went, and I had a great time, and that's where I started to come out of my shell a little bit. So I went back for a second summer and had a great time. And then the third summer, we were moving again, and my parents said, well, we can't go to beach camp, but you can go to the on-site camp. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I want to go back to the beach. So I went to the on-site camp and had a great time.
Yeah.
And you know, went to high school. Every summer I'd go back, and I was a staff and training camp counselor, started to really discover my love of camp. And then when I graduated high school, instead of going to college right off the bat, I decided I want to go into camping ministry.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'll just skip ahead a few years. So I was like, every year I'm going to go to college. So 5 years later, I was like, well, I really love camping ministry. And so I went to California Lutheran University in Thousand Oaks, California, and got my degree in theology and Christian leadership with an emphasis in youth and family ministry. So I was part of the first class with that major.
Okay.
So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of experimenting. So I think part of me feels like I'm really grateful for that experience, but part of me feels like I kind of missed out because that major's just gotten stronger as they've developed it.
Sure.
Because yeah. I was in that first class, like before the professor who taught youth and family ministry. I won't mention names because I doubt they'll ever listen to this.
Right.
But the person that led it before was on staff and had another job at the
sure.
school and really just saw the class as like, got to teach this. So basically this I'll just call them a professor.
Yeah.
Said, okay, here's your project. Just think of a fun game or activity and tie it to God. That's wow. your project.
Okay.
And so people loved the class. So there was a little more to it, but that's the general gist. So people would flock to that class. So when a new professor took over, she was really excited about this, wanted to make it a little more theological, and said, you know, we're going to set a standard for youth ministry. And so there was like 30, 40 people in our class. Like, you know, they were small classes, but that yeah. was like large for this campus. And I think 20 of them dropped after the first day after she handed out the syllabus.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm going to have to write a paper. I'm going to have to do this
yeah,
work.
I took this as an easy class. Yeah.
yeah. Like easy A's were gone.
Yeah.
And she was all about it. She asked all the students to turn off their phones. And, you know, this was 2010. So, mm-hmm. and even back then, some of the students in the class started getting anxiety and crying because they didn't know how to turn their phone off.
Wow.
So I'm like 16 years ago that was going on. So it just kind of blows my mind thinking about now where we are with all that stuff. So, but it ended up being a great experience. I feel like I learned a lot. I got to grow along with the professor and other professors, and I unintentionally became an English minor.
Okay.
So I love reading and writing, and I took enough English classes. I just needed one more, but it was like the capstone.
Yeah, sure.
Like, oh, it's okay. I'm happy with this degree. And yeah, I loved camp so much, I actually ended up going back right after I graduated.
Okay, so you work at camp right out of high school
yeah.
For about 5 years. You go to college. Are you working at camp while you're in college as well a little bit? Or
yeah, I'd worked 12 straight summers, but then between my junior and senior year, I'm like, you know, I need to experience something different. Because I had this worry, as much as I loved camp, I didn't know, you know, what I was going to do.
Sure, yeah.
And so I'm like, I'm going to take the summer off. I'm going to work at school. So I worked in our school mailroom. And that was a blast. I never worked like a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
So when I was done, I just didn't know what to do. Because, I mean, you know, camp life, it's
24/7.
It's, sure. it's your whole world. And so when I was done, I'm like, okay, I guess I'll go do something what normal people do.
Yeah.
Eat hot dogs, you know, go on a walk, go to a llama farm,
sure.
talk to people.
All the normal things. Yeah.
All the normal things.
Okay. Yeah. So as you're looking back, you know, those 12 years, and it sounds like you had years as a camper too. So, you know, years yeah. as a camper and then 12 years on staff. How would you say that your faith and maybe even your call into what I would describe as your call to ministry, right? You're perhaps not ordained, but you're certainly, I would classify you as someone who has a call to the ministry.
Yeah.
So how do you think that was shaped or how did camping ministry play a role in that experience for you?
Yeah, I think for me, I think of my second summer at beach camp. I remember going back and...
So second summer, you're in middle school at this point?
Yeah, okay. So I was in middle school, and I just remember the counselors I thought were so cool.
Yeah.
And they saw me.
Mm-hmm.
And being a kid who traveled a lot, never had stability or childhood friends, the fact that they saw me, they didn't laugh at me or make fun of me, they were willing to be goofy and see me and get to know me and my story, I thought that was really cool. And I think for me, that started this journey of wanting to share that with other kids because they made me feel so seen, heard, and loved. And I wanted to give that back. And I thought, okay, this is cool. If this is a place where people who love God, believe in Jesus, if this is how it is, I want to be a part of this community. So I started to get a little more confidence in who I was. And so I think that was the initial. I remember my camp counselor, this is a fun random fact, my second summer, his name is Drew, and he was the ex-drummer of the band Sublime.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you've heard of them.
I remember Sublime, yeah.
Yeah, so he was one of the drummers, so he would share stories that were appropriate, you know,
yeah,
for
sure.
middle school
yeah.
kids. So, And yeah, it was just really fun being seen by this, you know, Camp Kaltu, who I thought was really cool. Maybe as an adult, I would see him like, man, they were a total nerd. But I just loved that there were so many different types of kids. Like, yeah. I was a kid that enjoyed sports, but I was never the best. But I also didn't understand all these like things kids were talking about with like video games. I always felt like I was in this weird middle spot.
Mm-hmm.
So just to be able to see all of us come together to sing songs together, you know, and worship, to go do Bible study. It was just really cool. And I just fell in love with it and wanted to give it back. So
yeah.
I just kept going back. And next thing I knew, it was like 12 years later.
Yeah. As happens. Right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So if you could bring one aspect of your camping ministry, and this can be something you experienced as a camper or something that you did as a staff, you could bring one aspect of your camping ministry into your daily ministry now, what would it be? Like, what do you think camping ministry needs to offer to the greater church?
It's a great question. I don't know why food's the first thing that popped in my head.
I mean, I'm fine with that too. Yeah. Our
camp food was actually really good. I don't know if every camp says that.
I think some camps know that their food is not great. Yeah, I think we just accept that. And
Now I will answer your question, but we had a cook named Fernando who would make us like orange chicken and like pastrami sandwiches. And so it was awesome. I would say one thing is space for kids to be their authentic, silly selves. Because I think every youth or kid has they're all silly in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think giving them the space and permission to do that and to feel confident in who that is, especially with other kids that they might look at and like, oh, they're cooler than me. You know, cause for me, that idea of being cool is it's non-existent. Cause I think when you're just authentically yourself, you can really see people. So that's what I've tried and hope to bring in and to allow kids to, cause I remember having kids in youth group over the years that said, oh, I'm so shy. And then they end up being the most active or talkative ones.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's really beautiful. So what do you think it is about camp then that allows for that space that perhaps churches can learn from, or perhaps churches aren't doing that they should be doing?
Yeah, I think Lord of Life Youth Ministry has done a great job over the years, like, you know, going on this last mission trip with our youth and seeing how there were spaces, and obviously it's a little different, you know, we're there for a different purpose, but what camp always did so well was you are isolated, you know, depending on where you are, and you're with a group for that week that feels like a year. Feels like you're meeting your best friends and there's no one else around, your parents, so you're with, like, you know, typically a young adult who, when I was a camper, they felt like they were 40 or 50. Now I realize they were most likely in their early 20s. And so I think having those counselors, that cabin group, and just the way counselors were willing to be completely and utterly ridiculous, you know, because I remember the camp counselors, even as I started becoming a staff in training, we were all so different. You had some that were the most athletic, some that, you know, were like their studies were the most important, others that, you know, couldn't get into college, but they all came together with this purpose to share God's love. And so I think when counselors come in with their vulnerable selves, that allowed the youth just to be silly. And, you know, and I, there's a quote that I heard from a pastor at camp years ago, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. So really seeing these counselors take time to get to know. And I think when somebody like looks at you and sees you and spends time getting to know you and has no preconceived notions or judgments, that allows you to just start sharing more about yourself. And I think I learned a lot of things about things I would never care to learn. Like, I'm now a big fan of Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, because I remember we had campers that love that. And I'm thinking like, I don't want to read this like teeny bopper book.
Yeah.
But the kids talked about it. So I picked it up. I read it. We had some kids really into manga. And I remember like...
Wait. Back to Sisterhood. Did you watch the movies?
Absolutely.
Okay. Were they good?
Very disappointed.
Okay.
The books are so much better.
Well, they always are.
Yeah. And there was a fifth book that apparently came out 10 years later that I didn't know about, that I read, and I was really disappointed, but that's a whole nother story.
Okay. We'll save that for another time.
Of course. This is Sisterhood. Oh, there's probably a podcast on that.
I'm sure someone has a podcast.
I gotta look it up.
If not, you can start it. This can be your new thing.
Yeah.
That's a niche market right there. Yeah.
It is. So I think just taking time to know what the kids cared about and whether or not my personal interests align, but taking time to try to understand why they liked it. Mm. And so as I did that, I just saw them come out of their shell and be silly, and giving them the space to push them a little bit too. Cause I remember being pushed as a camper just a little bit in a way of saying, hey, would you like to lead us in worship? And I remember being terrified. So when I started learning guitar, my only goal was to learn the song. I know it's one of your favorites, Sanctuary.
Yeah, I love Sanctuary. I cannot get enough of it.
Yeah, the word DAG, it's great.
Yeah.
So that was my goal. And even though at the time I learned it and I could barely play it, nobody would be like, oh, that's so painful to listen to. People were supportive. The camp counselors were supportive. And I just think that constant support, that constant living out of, you know, God's, like, you know, because we were all kin there. So just really living into that, where everybody was siblings in Christ.
Yeah.
Everybody was fully loved. And being a part of Lutheran Church, I did not grow up in the ELCA. So I'm really grateful that my parents sent me to an ELCA camp where, you know, I started to learn more about the world and more about people. Because I was really naive. Like, even though I lived in China, I wasn't aware of who people are and you know, people that, you know, didn't fall into the same categories as me, you know, and who they love and who they are. So I think being exposed to that camp opened me up as well. And then I saw people being able to be silly and then come out and express their true selves.
Yeah. So what I hear, if I'm going to like pull a couple things out of what you've been talking about, it sounds like churches can work on being intentional in their relationships with kids. It sounds like churches can work on providing safe isolation, I guess. And what I mean by that is like safe spaces where you're pulled out of your normal setting and like you're in that, like a mission trip, that sort of thing, where it's safe. And so you're not isolated like on your own in a dark room alone, but you're in that space that's uncomfortable and foreign to you.
Yeah.
And then I also hear you really kind of pointing us towards this idea that we have to have a space for vulnerability, right? So we're not just intentional in what we're creating, but we're inviting that vulnerability and maybe even leading with that sense of vulnerability. I think that is something that congregational ministry, the vulnerability piece in particular, I think congregational ministry struggles with. Mm. And I'll just own this as someone who's made a profession of congregational ministry, right? That, you know, it's great that, you know, I think a lot of places are intentional saying we're going to have youth group every week. We're going to have a plan. Like, good. We're going to have confirmation. Yeah, yeah. Good. Intentional plans. Good. I think a lot of people know, oh, mission trips are important. We're going to get kids out of their normal environments. That's going to be good. Good. I do think that what we struggle with is saying, I, as an adult mentor for these kids, am going to share meaningfully parts of my own journey so that they see how they can share their journey.
Yeah.
And I think that there is, at least from my experience, there is safety in a camping setting where I'm your counselor for a week and I'm never going to see you again.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, because I'm never going to see you again, I am more willing to be vulnerable in an appropriate way.
Of course.
Right. To share appropriate things that I might not share with you if I think I worship with your family every week. Mm. Right.
Like, yeah.
Or, you know, whatever. I sit next to your grandmother in church. Like, I, you know, it's a harder place to be. And so I think that vulnerability and cultivating that vulnerability is where I at least see a, coming out of your experience, it's where I see a shortfall in the congregational church and an opportunity for us to continue to grow and to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as you say that, I think about a lot of parents, they drop their kids off at camp. Like, I've done my job now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
But there's so much intentionality, as you know, with the staff, how we're planning things, you know, who's in what cabin, what group and stuff. And so all the intentionality that happens is so important. So it's like, I think even here at church, you have families that, and we've both experienced this, where families like, I'm just going to drop my kid off for confirmation
or for
youth group, and to get them to invest, saying, well, we are just a support system. Because at the end of the day, I might see these kids once a week, twice at most, you know, and some kids once a month. And it's like, so how equipping the parents and other people in the congregation can, because people love to donate and help this, but can you donate your time? You know, and so that's why I'm really excited for the kind of in-between stock sales, is like these youth get to share their story and hear. And I've seen the most beautiful ministry. I had a 70-year-old that came in during our kind of confirmation time and shared her story, and her and one of the junior senior girls really connected.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it was just really beautiful. So I think sharing stories, because I think at camp we share stories in so many fun and silly ways. And how do we transpose that to congregational ministry? How do we open people up to share parts of their story that are appropriate and applicable for where these kids are at?
Just like what I was reminded of you as you're sharing the story, this beautiful story about this connection between the senior and the older adult. You know, I'm reminded of the playfulness of camp. I think the relationships like that are something that comes out of playfulness. And I think that playfulness is another one of those things that we kind of miss in the larger church sometimes, right? That, you know, we'll tolerate playfulness for a moment. We'll say like, oh yeah, here's a camping Sunday, and we'll have the kids come back and share their silly song or whatever. And then that's done. And now we're back to the way that church is quote unquote supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I think we're all guilty of it, and, you know, Lord of Life as well. I think perhaps less rigid than others, but we have our own rigidities that we live into and our expectations. And I think the playfulness that camping ministry offers, the ability for kids to fully express themselves and for it to be fully embraced in the playfulness of worship, is really a gift. I think that's something that we could certainly learn from in the larger church as well, because I think too often, even with our best intentions, we trap ourselves into thinking this is how church is supposed to look, right? And I get it. Like, you know, church, you come to church, there's a reverence, there's a holiness, there's a sacredness to that. I understand all of those things. And in the midst of that, there has to be space for people to be themselves and to be able to play. And I think that that's what we, that's often what we miss, right? So even like with the youngest kids, I've noticed this at Lord of Life, right? Like when there's a little baby, it's like, oh yeah, there's no problem tolerating. Oh, little baby is cute and they're crying and you know, mom and dad, we want to help them. We know how hard it is to be a mom. We're great at welcoming little babies in church. And you know, a lot of places are not, and I think we do that really well. But as kids gets older, you know, kids are squirrely and there's a tolerance shift, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't, no one's malicious, right? But there's like an expectation of like what church is supposed to be a certain way. And, you know, in worship at camp, like, yeah, there were things that we were doing, but there was never this is a certain way that you have to be present here. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does. And yeah. I think I have a just quick story about being in worship. I remember my church in California, we had a family and she had a young boy with autism that would run around.
Oh, sure.
During passing peace, he wanted to say peace to everyone. He mm-hmm, would run up mm-hmm. to the pastor. And one of the pastors he ran up to, he picked up the boy and just smiled. He's like, thanks for coming. I'm saying hi.
Yeah.
And it was this playfulness that was really beautiful. And he like gave permission, because you could tell there were some people that like looked around. I remember being at council meetings, other meetings, and people were like, well, this kid did this and that. And the pastor was just really kind of set the tone. And it was really refreshing. And there was a kids area in the back where kids could play and just be. And we had an older member who was on one of the committees on council came and just sat down and built blocks with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this playfulness happening. It's like when we saw other leaders starting to lead the charge to say, I'm going to sit down with this kid and do mm-hmm. this. And one of the things that I really love and appreciate about Lord of Life is, you know, at second service, there's a section that has some kids running around.
Yeah.
And
we call it our chaos corner. Yeah. My kids have been a part of it for a number of years. We're well familiar. Yeah.
Are they vice president, or do they?
Yeah. I think Sophia is kind of in the founding membership. I don't know that she has a leadership role, but I think definitely a founder. So the original chaos quarter would have been Sophia and one of her friends who's no longer here. They've moved away. They were kind of the original chaos of the corner. And then it has grown and expanded over time. So, yeah.
Is she trying to separate herself from that group, or she just says,
I think she is at the age where like she's to the point of like, she's starting to look at others and be like, why don't you know how to be in worship? I'm like, okay, you're in fifth grade, Sophia. Let's tone it down. So she's less chaotic than she used to be. Yeah.
And I do, there's some playfulness that happens too with the worship team.
Sure.
So even when they're leading, or you can tell there are certain songs that just for them, they're very powerful. And so I think when I see some of those leaders getting into it, or, you know, they play, it's just like, so I think every role in worship can be playful in ways that she'll show reference or, you know, appropriate. And so when those are done, like, I think there was one of my first Sundays here, there was something that happened there was a mishap, and the way it was handled was just saying, hey, it's just life. And it was really beautiful, because there's a lot of intentionality behind how worship happens. But just, I think, giving permission to each person in their role to be playful in ways, because everyone's playfulness is different. So yeah, I think my playfulness would be way too much if I like fully went out. And then I think other people's playfulness would be a little more subdued. Like my playfulness would be bringing a Nerf gun, or, you know, trying to do an example of the basketball. And I did accidentally one time, the candle, what candle am I thinking of?
Paschal candle?
The Paschal candle. Mm-hmm. I knocked it over and spilled oil. I just got a little too much into worship. One time I was doing a dance and, you know, but I remember when I would lead, like when I worked at camp, we would do day camp. So, you know, we go out to churches and that was a great chance for the playfulness to happen, to bring that camp playfulness. Cause you say, you know, people tolerate it. And they did. And I remember even like when I worked at my church, when the day camp staff, I would lead this song, A La La, where, and so passing the peace, and I would encourage like, all right, everyone stand up. So we're going to pass the peace a little differently. And you could just feel the tension.
Like, why are we doing this?
And I could just feel the
was
stares.
This approved by council?
No, it was, like, seriously, it's like, you know, I felt like I had to sign a contract just to sing this song.
Sure.
But then you had some people in their 70s and 80s doing these little jigs and like giving a high five or being silly. So I found like, okay, if I can rein in my playfulness in a way that welcomes others in. And so I think that's good. I think it's, how do you train a congregation to see playfulness, not even as play, just like, this is who we are, this is what we do.
Yeah, I hear that. I think that's great. Well, I think we can both agree. Camping Ministry has had some great experiences for us. I think there's a lot that the congregation can learn from Camping Ministry.
Oh, yeah.
If people want to know more about Camping Ministry here in our area, Luther Hill Ministries is our local ELCA camp. Yeah. There's some other great Lutheran camps here in Texas and wherever you are. If you're listening to this to another area, there are great camps. I can attest to great camps in Ohio, as part of Lutheran Outdoor Ministries in Ohio.
Okay.
I'm sure that you can attest to some great camps in California.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, and if you just want to learn more about camps out here, just go to www.awesomeelcacampsintexas.org.
That's not a thing. Don't look that up. I don't know what's at that web address.
Yeah.
I cannot be held responsible for that. But if you do want to know more about the youth ministry and wonderful things that are happening here and hear more about that experience, join us in worship. It'll be this coming Sunday. So this comes out on Monday. So the 26th, join us in worship for the opportunity to hear from our youth as they share about their experience in Puerto Rico. And we hear a little bit about how they had some of that intentional and vulnerable space that was created for them there.
Yeah,
all right. Anything else today?
Thanks for having me on and letting me share and talk about
absolutely.
Camp and playfulness. And I learned a little bit about Ohio. Actually, I can't lie. The key turning thing is kind of cool. Alistair Moody.
That was the name. That was the Harry Potter name. Was he Alistair or was he Moody?
He was Alistair Moody.
That was his full name.
Yeah, that was his full name.
Wow, that is identity theft is what that is. Yeah,
100%.
You should be suing J.K. Rowling and getting some of that INL deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a
NIL,
random.
That's it. NIL, not INL. I don't know what the INL is.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you have thoughts on how we're using your name and image and likeness inappropriately, you can give us those emails at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com and find all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com. So as Patrick would say, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.
Take care.